You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we're about to yell do it like Rorschach. Well, at least I am. Who am I? I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and I think that's two Rorschach intros in a row. 2 weeks in a row, two Rorschach intros. I think that says a lot probably about my state of mind and maybe the state of mind of everyone else. And I think that that is part of what we're going to discuss this week because we're still embroiled, if that's the right verb, in this pandemic. So let me start bringing in everyone else. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
I am still here. Huzzah.
Is that a metaphysical statement, or is that a statement about being on the podcast? That's a very broad...
I'm starting to tire, finally. I'm starting to tire of not going places. I'm starting to tire of the endless discussion about what we know and what we don't know. I'm starting to tire about people putting on objective face and going to social medias and acting as if... they are the purveyors of all information in the universe. I'm starting to tire, Justin. I feel like Madeline Kahn in Blazing Saddles.
Oh, so you're where I was March 1st, basically.
Yeah, I guess I have a greater tolerance for nonsense than you do, but such is
life.
You
know, you know my tolerance for nonsense is zero.
Yes. Pretty much.
Well, hold on to that emotion, hold on to that experience, because that's really what I want to build towards on this episode, is I have a big question that I was asking myself this week that I think your emotional state directly plays into, and I think we're observing that state across the country. So hold on to that. But first, let's bring in who's also joining us from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his gay white male privilege. William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, I'm in a later state than you guys. I'm in the dream state of, like, you know, being further and further disconnected from what some people call reality out there. I totally know that we're supposed to be wearing masks when I go pick up food or go to the grocery store. I totally was running errands and at one point got out of the car and started to walk into a place and realized, oh, I don't have my mask. It's back in the car. I had to go back to the car and get it.
I carry the mask with me, and I only wear it if somebody's going to throw me out of a place. Like, I walked into Chipotle the other day, and they're like, you can't come in here without a mask, so I went to my car and got it. But any other place, if I walk in and nobody's wearing a mask, or, you know, there's people there not wearing a mask, I don't wear it. I don't believe the mask is doing anything. I believe these are TSA measures.
Oh, it's doing something. Oh, it's doing something. Conditioning people.
Right. That's exactly what I mean.
It's absolutely nuts. The almost religious fervor that has taken hold of people for this complete control and giving total control to their, you know, government overlords. It's absolutely nuts. Any amount of questioning of it is you're immediately excommunicated from society, right? You must be a virus denier. It's fascinating.
Exactly. And that's why I use the metaphor of the TSA, Daniel, because the TSA is largely show. I know someone well who used to work for the FAA, and he would test sneaking things through security, and he would do it very easily. But it's the show, it's a theater to make us feel good and also to make us compliant. And I think it's the same thing with what's going on now with the masks. And eventually they're going to use forehead thermometers when we need to get in anywhere.
Yeah, famous security researcher. I always butcher his name. I think it's pronounced Bruce Schneier. Wrote about that back when the TSA started. And as a test, it's not illegal anymore, but so I guess I could admit to it. As a test, I would always smuggle my safety razor. I use a real safety razor. the blades through TSA, and I got them through 100% of the time. 100% of the time.
Maybe we could get them on a technicality, blade. Justin, with the mask thing, and you could just wear it on your ass.
Yeah, is it implied that it has to be on your face?
I haven't seen the law. Have you seen the law? I haven't seen the law.
I haven't seen the law either, and this is actually a William question because he's still in California. Here in Osceola County, Florida, they're just saying you need face coverings. So I could technically just buy, like, a Lucha Libre mask and put that on. It wouldn't do anything, right?
I think I mentioned it on the store. The employees at my store, I think I mentioned it on the podcast already, are wearing rave masks. That's their
face covering. We're all going to just be gangsters from the 90s with handkerchiefs pulled over our faces. Anyway, all of this discussion is relevant to what we're going to talk on here. We're not going to do news again. News is going to be wrapped into our discussion because it's impossible not to have this discussion without touching on some news stories. But as we've been doing over the past month, couple months, I don't even know how long it's been, we're just going to head right into Life on the Midside. Take a good look around. This life really sucks. We've got three topics to talk about today, one from each of us. They're all escalating, I would say, in seriousness as we get more serious as we go. Although I don't want to say that none of them are serious because they're all serious. But it's just that the first story, Daniel's story, I think, Daniel, you would agree that yours is the most farcical. So when we're talking about witnessing the farce, I think you have a great farcical story that's happened as a result of all of this.
Oh, it's top notch. So I have a conundrum, guys. Okay, here's my conundrum.
Is that different from a dilemma?
It is different in the spelling. In February, for those of you who don't know, my mom passed away. Not unexpected, but sudden, if you can parse that out.
Right before the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, she couldn't stand to be in a world where the Patriots were Super Bowl champions.
That's
right. She was like, peace, I'm out.
She passed away during the national anthem, in fact. So, giant F you. Anyway. So, okay. Here's the situation. So, before my mom passed, she was getting her affairs in order because she sort of saw potentially that the end was coming. And so she filed a tax return. And I helped her with that. But she filed it while she was alive. She then passed away. So then we get
Can I ask a question about that before we continue?
Yes.
I don't know the law of that. If she had died without filing it, would you have then been responsible for filing it?
You don't have to file, but you are allowed to file.
Because you might get money back.
Why would you file? Because you might get money back. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Right. And I'm allowed to inherit that money. That's very clear. That point is very crystal clear. It's all over the IRS website.
It's just like, if I'm going to die, I'm not going to file any fucking paperwork with the government. If you want the money, you fucking file it. I'm not going to go through the effort.
But apparently this happens enough that they have a section of their website dedicated to this exact question. So we get a letter from the IRS after she passes saying, hey, we're not processing this refund because we think it's fraudulent. We think someone is pretending to be Karen, and Karen needs to call this number to basically prove that she actually filed the tax return. Okay, well, calling that number is basically a multiple matrices of impossible to navigate scenarios and questions, and that whole thing has been a nightmare.
That happened with my grandmother, actually. There was some issue with back taxes for my grandfather, who's been dead for like 12 years. When we were in grad school, he died. and they were trying to like make my grandmother pay it and everything or something. I don't know the exact details of it, but my dad actually called, and you know, he's retired and has nothing else to do. So he stayed on the phone till he talked to somebody, and he was like, guy, nobody cares about this. Like, if you just let this go, it will never in the history of the world impact you or anyone else. And he somehow, I mean, he ran a business for how many years? He somehow was able to talk them down and make it so that money's not owed anymore.
Yeah, first of all, getting someone on the phone for the IRS is next to impossible. Two, getting them to understand what you're asking is literally impossible. They have no idea. They have no idea what you're asking. If it's beyond, like, when is tax day, they have no clue whatsoever. And so you get transferred around to eternity. And that portion is still not resolved. But, ladies and gentlemen, lo and behold, I get an alert that there's a deposit made into my mother's account, her bank account. Why is her bank account still open? Because we're still waiting on the tax return. That's why the bank account is still open. And my name is on it as well, so it's a joint account. But we get an alert that there's a deposit been made in the bank account by the IRS. Fantastic. Maybe they've processed her tax return after all, even after all the shenanigans. So I open up the app, look at the deposit. It's Trump bucks.
Did it have my mother's signature on it?
Who is dead. Received an economic stimulus check from the government based on, gentlemen,
I have
her 2019 tax return.
I have a really bad, awful, inappropriate joke in my head.
Oh, please. she would have loved it.
Trump stimulated her.
She was a huge Trump supporter, so I'm sure she'd be fine with that. Right. So here's the thing. Apparently this is happening quite frequently. And some tax experts have written an article on this topic in particular and basically said, look, there's nothing written into this law. Unlike previous laws, some previous laws, not all, there's nothing written into this law that says if the money was distributed incorrectly, that you are responsible for paying it back in any way. There's no what's called a clawback provision for this particular CARES Act, I think is what it's called, because the government has nothing better to do except come up with stupid names for their laws. So the money, it's been distributed, and it's out there, and there's no way to give it back. So I'm not legally obligated to give it back. Here's my conundrum. It's not my money. It's not my money. So while I'm not legally required to give it back, should I take it? Should I accept it in some way? Thoughts?
What do you mean it's not your money?
Well, my mother, one, wasn't supposed to get this check, so it's not even her money in that sense. And then two, on top of that, it's definitely not my money then. It's two levels removed from being possibly mine. I mean, it would technically become mine in the sense that when I close the account, they will write a check and anything in that account then belongs to me. But she wasn't supposed to get the check in the first place.
But she did.
The chat is asking in Discord, join our Discord by going to theminside.com and clicking on the episode links. Yeah, they're asking that question. Like, so you're saying if her taxes had been properly processed in 2019 and accepted, not for fraud, then she wouldn't have gotten it.
Well, I'm saying that, well, it's unclear because you have to have certain qualifications to get this money. Like, you have to make so much money to get this money. And it appears that they made a mistake in sending it to her in the first place.
Okay, because she didn't even make... Look, I'm going to just interrupt here.
Okay.
This is the government, okay? You are supposed to get this money if they put the money in your checking account, all right? There's no, like... Here's the question for me is not...
It's not illegal. I'm not asking a legal question, to be clear.
I'm not asking a legal... I'm not making a legal argument. I'm making a moral argument. They put the money in the account. If they don't want it back, use the money. But here's the question I have morally about it. Not that this money doesn't belong to you. This money belongs to you. They took it in there. They put it in your mother's account. You get your mother's stuff, unless there's something in her will that says if there's an extra $1,200, you give it to Justin. Then it's my money, and thank you, give it to me. But it's not. It's your money. see, even River agrees, if you just heard her. She was like, yeah, take the money, because River would very much like a lot of cat food. No, here's the question I have. I just see that, and I just see the amount of government ineptitude, where we have this $2 trillion stimulus package, and they're literally giving money to dead people. So, are you contributing to the economic depression of our society by taking the money, or is it just that they made the error, they're the ones doing it, so you might as well, you know, like you're playing Monopoly, bank error in your favor, you might as well just keep it.
I don't know any scenario where if there's a real bank error in your favor, you get to keep the money, just to be clear.
We just found it.
That is only an invention of Milton Bradley.
Is that a rule in Monopoly, or is that just when you played with your family?
No, that's a card. That's like a chance card.
Oh.
It says bank error in your favor, collect $10 or whatever it is. $20, something like that. But point being, so I already have mixed feelings about the stimulus money in general. I get the thinking that you can just look at it as a tax return, because I've certainly paid more in taxes than the $2,900 that I got back from my wife and child. But at the same time, that money's basically already spent. And so the government is printing new money in order to give me money back, which is bad. I don't want it to do that. So I already have mixed feelings about the stimulus. Now I'm getting more stimulus money than I was intended to get because my dead mother received a stimulus check. Do you see why this is at least somewhat of a conundrum to me? I know it sounds like a very weird first world nonsense problem, but it is, to me, legitimately weighing on my conscience.
Well, that's why I said to you that the question for me is not, is it your money or not? It's your money, but the question is just, how much should you feel responsible for this great suppression we're in? Because as you're saying, they are just printing money, and they are devaluing the dollar more by doing it, and they've done it more than they need to because they've paid how many dead people this money? So I get what you're coming from, but I don't think you should internalize this. And William, tell me if I'm wrong here, but it's not his error, it's their error. And the error's been made, and they gave it to him, and he's off scot-free, so why not just take the money and be cool with it? I mean, if you're really that worried about it, there are 2021 Patriots season tickets to pay for. Notice I didn't say 2020, because this season there's going to be no tickets. William, what do you say? Am I crazy here?
I don't think you're crazy. I'm looking at this whole thing as because I have the same conundrum with the whole paycheck protection program. I'm one of the lucky few that actually got the grant. A bunch of businesses didn't, but I just see it as a tax refund. You know?
Wait, how much did they give you to pay paychecks?
No, I don't think I really want to share that, but it's several months.
I thought you said
payroll.
A grant. I thought you okay. I thought you said a grand.
A grand.
Oh, grant. I was like, they give you a grand to pay paychecks.
Yeah.
I was like, Jesus, that's because they gave all the money to the dead people.
During the last stimulus, I was reading a little bit about this was it Obama who gave out some money? I forget. Whoever the last president was to give out money, they gave
I think.
A little more than $18 million to dead people. So it'll certainly be more than that this time.
I need to be dead so I can get $18 million. Think of the cool computer shit I could buy.
All right, so I'm going to think on this some more, but if any Midsiders have any thoughts, you can tweet at Daniel T. Richards or shoot me a message somewhere and let me know what you think. My moral responsibility is to do with the money, not my legal responsibility, but my moral responsibility is to do with the money.
Well, okay, let me ask you this. What would you do with the money if your moral responsibility was not to accept it?
Well, right now, to not accept it? Sorry. Didn't even consider that possibility. Just kidding. I don't know. I mean, I could literally go and give it to the Treasury. There is a place on the Treasury website where you can just donate money to the Treasury. So that's one horrifying option. But maybe that's necessary. I could donate it to a cause, although that feels just as morally wrong since it's not my money. I don't know, because I haven't determined what I'm going to do with it, because I haven't determined what my moral responsibility is yet.
I mean, why don't you give it to Nancy Pelosi? That's what it would be used for, to pay her salary, right? Or why don't you find a lobbyist group to give it to the lobbyist group, because that's who would end up with it anyway. You get the
Maybe
point I'm
making
here.
Maybe I should take Kavanaugh out for a beer.
I mean, that's fine.
Donate to the Joe Biden election campaign.
Huh. Give it to the Bernie Sanders campaign. His donations are still open, last I checked.
Are they? I thought he returned a shitload of money. No?
I don't know. I don't think websites are his forte.
Well, that's a good one. How about that one? Did you see that one in the chat? Stash the cash and use it to pay the government what you owe in taxes. That's not bad. Just keep that as a $1,200 fund that if you ever owe a lot of taxes, you just use that.
It's interesting. Just hold it in purgatory, essentially.
I like that suggestion.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I mean, the best suggestion is still
about
season tickets.
I'm going to think about it some more. And
save it for all your Corona mask tickets.
That's
that
true.
You're going to be getting for not wearing your Corona mask.
That's true.
True. That's right. $1,200 worth of fines for going outside.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, that's one consequence of everything that's going on. And I think William sent us an article this week, has a topic he wants to bring up that's another interesting sort of consequence of everything that's going on.
Oh, is that next? I thought we were talking about the beaches next.
No, no, no. Yours leads into the last thing, because I have a question to ask you that's going to lead into the last thing. And I go last. It's my show.
Oh, man. So Andreessen Horowitz.
I'm going to talk about violent revolution here, and you want that to go second?
Andreessen Horowitz, one of the guys that's part of the A16Z, like the big angel investing firm, creator of the Netscape browser, all sorts of internet history. Mark Andreessen is the guy. He wrote this great article. It's on their blog. Links in our description for the show, where he basically talks about that it's time to build. So he talks about, basically laments the fact that we have a failure of inspiration to actually build things. And he touches on a lot of the things that we've touched on the show, actually. He talks about how, you know, education hasn't changed since the 1960s, that cities like San Francisco and New York and Los Angeles can't build, right? When in Westworld, when they want to show a future city, they go to Singapore and record. They can't do it in Los Angeles or New York. Those haven't been modernized, right? There's no new building things.
LA is stuck in like what, the 50s or the 60s with their architecture?
Yeah. He brings up, where are the supersonic aircraft? I know we've got, I know of people working on that, but you know, where are they, right? Where are the millions of delivery drones, high-speed trains, hyperloops, flying cars? Where are these things, right? The problem is desire, he says. We need to want these things. The problem is inertia. We need to want these things more than we want to prevent these things. The problem is regulatory capture. We need to want new companies to build these things, even if incumbents don't like it, even if only to force the incumbents to build these things. And the problem is will. We need to build these things. And we need to separate the imperative to build these things from ideology and politics. Both sides need to contribute to building. So he talks about those things, and then to draw it all together. Our nation and our civilization were built on production, on building. Our forefathers and foremothers built roads and trains, farms and factories. Then the computer, the microchip, the smartphone, and uncounted thousands of things that we now take for granted that are all around us, that define our lives and provide for our well-being. There is only one way to honor their legacy and to create the future we want for our own children and grandchildren, and that is to build. So, I thought this was a great article. It came out on the 18th, coming out on a great time. And we have all of these folks basically almost out of Atlas Shrugged, right? Saying we just need to stand still, right? We'll just stand still long enough. Things will be better. And it's a very scary notion. And this I see as sort of the beginning of the, especially coming from Silicon Valley, right? If this is the attitude. So this is the Silicon Valley I fell in love with, right? This is the reason I've never moved to Silicon Valley, is because this is so rare in Silicon Valley today. And as far as what we need to do, I agree with him. We need to build. What do you guys think?
Well, your point about Atlas Shrugged is very well taken. I think I compared that way in the beginning of this, where I said Directive 10289. I'm actually very surprised the government didn't say you can't fire anyone and didn't just put everything on hold, which is right out of the book. I thought that was going to happen as a way to keep the unemployment down and say we're literally just pausing everything. I was surprised when they started to let people be fired. But I think that in general, the point you're making when he says, you know, this is what this country was founded on, is being productive and building. Daniel, that's not just this country. That's how you live as a human being, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's very Ayn Rand and it's very poetic, but the whole notion of like a human life is constant motion, right? It's a straight line forward. It's movement. And the antithesis of that is stillness, is because that represents death. In no circumstance in our life do we accept any sort of long-term or undecided stillness where we say, just don't move. Just don't do anything. Don't think. Just sit here and everything will be fine. It'll almost never be fine. And the concept of we must build, we must progress, is the answer, here it is, pretty controversial, to pretty much every single problem. And I mean this very literally in the sense that, like, for those out there who believe, for instance, that fossil fuels are creating unsustainable climates, what is the answer? Not to regress, not to stand still, but to progress forward, to move technology as quickly as possible past the fossil fuels. For those that believe we have an overpopulation problem, what is the solution? Not to reduce the population, not to keep the population the same, not to stand still, but to progress so that we have a more sustainable, quote unquote, environment for more human beings, to move out into space, perhaps, to launch rockets and live on other planets. Progress, building, industrialization, civilization, all these things are the solution to every problem.
I agree completely, and we see this with the modern progressives, where your point about environmentalism is
ironically named.
Right, well, you jumped ahead in what I was about to say. That's why your point is very well stated about environmentalists, where they want progress, but their solution to progress is to move backwards. We're not going to use fossil fuels anymore.
Yeah, I really like, I'm going to read this one more paragraph because this is just so full of gold. It touches on this environmentalism thing in the second half, so bear with me. He says here, show that new models of public sector healthcare can be inexpensive and effective. How about starting with the VA? When the next coronavirus comes along, blow us away. Even private universities like Harvard are lavish with public funding. Why can't 100,000 or 1 million students a year attend Harvard? Why shouldn't regulators and taxpayers demand that Harvard build? Solve the climate crisis by building. Energy experts say that all carbon-based electrical power generation on the planet could be replaced by a few thousand new zero-emission nuclear reactors. So let's build those. Maybe we can start with 10 new reactors, then 100, then the rest.
Yeah. Fantastic. Amen. All around.
Right. So then my response to this is, I agree with everything it says, and I agree with, especially with its premise that we showed we were unprepared for what happened. You know, they talked about the lack of medical supplies, the lack of testing supplies, the lack of cotton swabs, all of these things we were unprepared for, this incident. So then, perhaps this incident is a good thing? And what I mean by that is, I hope you heard the question in my voice as I said that, could this be a wake-up call for us that we should say, like I did after 9/11, I was like, somebody's about to get fucked up. And then when we didn't fuck up another country, I was like, what's going on with our country? Shouldn't we say the same thing here, where it says earlier in the article, it's like, this is America and we're using rain ponchos as scrubs or whatever it was saying. So this is America and we're doing that. And I mean, I've pointed out these pictures of when you're going into stores, it's like communism. It looks like you're in a rationed country where you can only certain people can go into stores at the same time. And we're reacting to this virus as if it's a lot more deadly than it is, because of us being unprepared, but also because we rely so much on the government, and the government's only solution is not to produce, Daniel. It's to make us stop.
Yeah. I mean, the part – I haven't read this article, full disclosure. I like Mark Andreessen typically, so I'm sure I'll love this article when I do read it. And William, please correct me if I'm wrong. But the part of this that doesn't get talked about enough, and I don't know if it's in this article, is not just we need to build, i.e. we need to have this sort of progressive attitude, real progressive attitude in terms of our industrialization, but the fact that that comes from our ideas, the things, our values that we hold. We need to realign our values to be productive values and not collective ones. We need to realign our values so that we will accept building again, so that we will want to build again, I think is what he said in the beginning of the article, so that we have the desire to build new civilizations and new things. And I don't think we have that. And I don't think that's a United States problem. I think that's a human problem at the moment because of all the underlying nonsense premises we've accepted. So a corollary of this article would be something like it's also time to rebuild our ideas.
Yeah, I think that's probably asking too much of this short article. But
yes,
but yeah,
it's indeed.
Absolutely.
I don't expect it of him. I'm just pontificating at this point.
Pontificate away, my friend.
I think it's a great pontification, and I actually think there's a thing that comes before it. Before we build, I think we have to do something else to shake us out of this mindset. And that was why I asked the question I asked about how maybe this is a wake-up call, because this goes into my thought that I've been having this week. And a lot of things have happened in this past week that's really reinforced this thought to me. And the question I have for all of you, and I wish I had told you, William, to get a Captain Picard from Star Trek First Contact drop here, because it would be perfect. I meant to tell you that, but I forgot. It slipped my mind. My question is, where is the line with everything that is going on? And based upon that question, when is the right time, or when is the time when we are morally obligated to stand up and rebel? This question has legitimately been on my mind. I'm getting to the point that I'm ready. Now, I have seen, you know, Comic-Con was canceled, and that's one of the things that's pushing me forward. Not that it's Comic-Con in specific, but that people are saying July can't happen now, basically. They're talking about running sports but without fans because they don't want to have large gatherings through the year 2022. They're throwing out all these numbers to see what sticks. And something I've learned is it's okay to work from home. It's okay to have your little small life, but the ability to go out and do things is really, really important. And what I mean by that is they've essentially kept us inside, not because we want to be inside, but because if we go outside, where are we going to go? Like, I can't go to a restaurant. I can't go to Disney. I mean, I can now go to beaches, but I couldn't go anywhere. And that was the other thing that really struck me. In California, they filled Venice Skate Park with sand to keep people from going. In Florida, They opened up some of the beaches, and people went. And I was like, wow, I'm glad that I moved over here. Like, it's just, I see people are not wanting to stay inside. I see people are getting sick of all of this. I see some small protests starting. So where is the line, and when are we morally obligated?
The line must be drawn here. This far, no farther.
Yes. That is the drop. Thank you. Iconic moment.
Too many retreats.
It's okay. Perfect. Isn't that speech not perfect right now?
It's perfect.
I got the whole speech, too.
Well, what does he say? They invade our space and we fall back.
Oh, I can play it. You
Isn't
want me to play it?
No.
Yeah. No. Oh. No. Copyrights. Oh, copyrights.
There you go.
Copyrights. Here's the thing, Justin. I think it's a fine question to ask, although I think it's a little harsh at this point. But it's a
have
fine question to ask.
Have you met me?
We're here to have discourse. It's fine. I think before we even have to go that route, I think people are naturally going to just ignore things. So what I mean is, it is not, it, yes, the government has the ability to keep us.
Shrug?
They're going to what?
Shrug.
Shrug. Oh, yes, 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 of course. Absolutely.
Yeah, I thought he said drug at first, and then I was like, oh, no, he's saying shrug.
That's exactly right, William, because while the government can keep us in our houses, and they could keep us here quite literally at the point of a gun in many cases, I don't think they will for the most part. And at some point, it's just that people are going to decide when they think it's safe to go outside. Because it works both ways, right? So if 3 weeks ago, for instance, the government had said, at any level had said, okay, country's open, do whatever you want, I think a vast majority of people would not have gone out still. But now, 3 weeks later, if the government did that, I think more people would go out, but I don't think everyone would go out. And ultimately, I think people are going to decide for themselves what they think the safest behavior is, and the government will have some influence on that. Point ultimately being, they only have that influence for so long before people will either go out just because they don't care anymore, or because they have to, because their lives depend on productivity and going out.
And that is what I want to be.
Whether it's working or whether it's just value seeking, to be clear.
Right. And that's what I want to be clear about the term go out. What would the government really do if spontaneously all the businesses or 75% of the businesses just started operating again? Disney, Universal opened, all of the malls opened, all of these entertainment venues opened, bands started going on tour. Minor league baseball started.
Well, you've already
up.
Had speakeasies.
MLB started.
I there's already speakeasies here in LA.
Yes.
Yeah.
I believe that.
Yeah. I could go out to a speakeasy tonight. This is
what a time
worst kept
in.
Secret. Yeah, worst kept secret, I guess, in LA. There's tons of things going on, and it's starting up now, right? And it's very hush-hush,
right.
And because of the negative Nancys, the Karens, so to speak, as the meme goes, that would, narc on people. And the amount of guilt, right? Like, trying to socially shame people. How dare you,
did you see that,
not wear a mask?
By the way, that Mayor Garcetti tweeted out a website where you could report businesses that were violating the stay-at-home order, and somebody replied to it. And she was like, do we have to give our details? Because I don't feel comfortable giving my personal information while reporting. I got her to delete her tweet because I told her she was a disgusting human being and the reason I left California. Then she deleted her tweet.
I would the website with reports of little girls keeping diaries in the attic upstairs.
I mean, well, okay.
Report
this is
the mayor's office over and over again.
Well, with Reddit and the things they do and the way the, 4chan and the things they do, why aren't they doing things like that?
I was thinking about where is the line?
Isn't there a moral imperative to do that?
I tweeted, and this was a serious thing. I think we should organize a protest and go take the sand out of the skate park over in, was it Huntington Beach? Or was it over in...
Venice Beach.
Venice Beach. Okay, Venice Beach. Venice Beach, even closer.
All the fucking vagrants who, all they do is spread disease anyway. Have you been to Venice Beach? Like... How's that not the epicenter?
So, yeah, I mean, at some point, people will just ignore things. And I may have reported this before, but like DC traffic last week or so was about as normal as it gets on a Saturday and a Sunday. Because people are starting to go out because they're making evaluations for themselves that it is safe to do so. And maybe there are people taking additional precautions like wearing masks or gloves or staying further apart.
False.
But things are...
If you go out in public, hold on. If you go out in public, nobody tries to stay 6 feet away from you. I swear to God, it's like I'm living back in California again. I go out in public and I try and avoid people and they walk directly into you on purpose. That's why I left California and now the fucking government made it so the rest of the country is California. I can't fucking stand it. Sorry, continue.
Maybe you should wear platform boots or something.
It's not a height thing, man. They look right at you, and they can tell you're trying to avoid them, and then they walk directly into your path.
You have this weird relationship with other humans that I don't have. Anyway, point being, people will decide. That's who will decide. And yes, the government can do something about it. They can step up with guns and point them at you and make you go back to your home. And at that point, I think your question about rebellion is much more serious and requires much more in-depth discussion. But I just don't think it'll get that far. I think many states will, quote unquote, open up sooner rather than later, especially as we start looking at places like Sweden, which never really closed down. You can go out to eat in Sweden. You can go to movies. You can go to nightclubs. And their death per thousand is slightly higher than ours, but they're not being ravaged by the disease, and they're on their way to herd immunity, and we're not.
Well, I have a question about that, too. And this goes to what I was saying at the top of the show about, you know, the head thermometers and the masks and the gloves and everything and the TSA. Is it even acceptable if they reopen, but they say every restaurant can only be half capacity because you can only seat tables 6 feet apart from each other? Because to me, that's not acceptable. The idea that
Most restaurants in New York wouldn't even be able to open. They don't have 6 feet.
And that's what I'm saying. That's the entire point I'm making. The idea that we're fundamentally have to change our entire lives, where we would really have to bulldoze all our cities and rebuild them, for it's a different architectural standard, because life is theoretically supposed to be fundamentally different based upon the results of this virus. I don't buy it. And I, even if they open and we go back out and they say that, are we obligated to rebel? Because that's the point I'm at. The point I'm at is I don't think life should be different. I don't think this is as big of a... Look, I'm going back to where I was, and I want to be clear. Daniel, I was consistent from this point from day one, was I not?
Depends on what point you're about to make. I'm assuming yes, go ahead and make your point.
Okay, I thought you were going to know what I was going to say, because I was building towards it, and I say the same thing. Have I not been consistent from day one that this is not that big of a fucking deal?
Yes. You have been consistent on that point from day one.
Yes, I still believe it. It's not that big of a deal. We see the antibody studies coming out of Stanford University showing that, hey, maybe this is more prevalent than we thought. Maybe more people have it and they just don't show symptoms. We see we're nowhere near the death count we thought we were going to be at. We see the people who are getting it and who are dying. I don't think this is as big of a deal. And if for this to fundamentally change our lives, I think this goes back to William's article, that we need the American spirit to wake up and say, no, this isn't who we are, and this isn't the life we want.
And I think
American dream
is
living the life we want.
I think outside of the big cities, it is. I mean, you see the rebelling happening in Michigan already. And I think in other places... You know, I'm hearing different reports from different folks out and about. They are defying this in a way, and in ways that I think will slowly get reported over the next few weeks. Especially, you know, now that you know Trump's put out the guidance on opening back up and things like that. Like, people are going to be like, why aren't we doing these things? Right? They're going to be holding their governments accountable.
And Justin, just to put a different rhetorical spin on what I'm saying, vis-a-vis what you're saying, I just don't think rebellion looks like rebellion. Maybe to use to appropriate a phrase from de Tocqueville, it's a soft rebellion, where people just go about their lives because either one, they have to, either for values or for productivity or some other necessary reason, or just because they want to, because they've decided that the government is wrong. But in some places, it'll be like Michigan, where they're lining the streets 10,000 deep with cars and protesting the governor. And in some places, it'll be more like here, where people are just going out now.
Or here, where they're just going to the beach?
Right. So
you're telling me next weekend I should drive to Jacksonville and go to the beach as a form of rebellion?
I would never tell you to do that. The point I think that I would like to bring back from shows previous, and it's sort of implicit in all of this, but just to make it very explicit, is whether you believe this is serious or not, and I do believe, and we all believe, I think, that this is serious, but not as serious as the initial reports of 2 million dead, if you remember those reports. People with pre-existing conditions can die from this more readily than other diseases.
Yes, I agree with that fact. That is a fact. I agree with it.
Yeah, so that's serious.
I do not agree that this is serious in the sense that it is an existential threat to our nation or to the world.
Okay, that's fine. I think there's some middle ground there to play with, but I get what you're saying. And my point is, it's not as quote-unquote serious as the estimates of 2 to 3 million dead. And I want to get back to that in 1 second in terms of estimations.
Is there even a million dead across the world right now?
I don't know, but I don't think so. I don't think it's close to that. But I don't know. I haven't looked at... I've tried not to look at the numbers anymore. Point being... God damn you, Justin. What was my point being? I interrupted myself 9 times, and you interrupted me 3 times, and I forgot what my point was.
Okay, so there's only been 2.4 million cases across the world. There's only been 164,000 deaths across the world. Across the world, 164,000.
Yes.
And we were told 2.2 million people would die in this country.
Yes. Now, 160,000 deaths is still a lot of people dead, which is why I say it's serious. The explicit point. I knew I had something. The explicit point that the government response to this, partially driven by our cultural response to this, would be orders of magnitude worse than the virus itself. That is something that everyone on this show has been saying since the moment this story broke. And we were initially ridiculed pretty badly by some people online. And I just think it is becoming crystal clear that that is the case. Crystal clear. Non-negotiable clear that that is the case. The virus is serious. People can die from it. 160,000 deaths statistically is not a lot, but it's still, you know, that's still sad. But the government responses around the world have been way, way, way worse than the virus itself. And I just wanted to make that super, super explicit because we were early on talking about it and no one else was.
Yeah, I do love going online now and seeing people say the stuff I said at the beginning of March. So,
Justin, for some reason, texted us a shirtless picture of himself.
Did I?
I don't know.
Fuck, nice. Really? That
Why?
Was the wrong... Sorry. Wrong text thread. Wrong text thread. I apologize.
I'm very glad this was only from the nipples up, actually.
You know what's really bad?
Don't want to know.
I was like, don't send this to the group text thread, and I still fucking did it. Totally meant for a different person. I apologize.
That is the face I was imagining you were making, though.
So getting back to the estimates point for a moment, because I think Adam Carolla made an interesting point on his show this week, which is, so like Dr. Drew, for instance, has been thoroughly trashed online for a lot of clips he had that were taken out of context about the seriousness of this disease. And by some statements where he said something like, we'd have 20,000 deaths, for instance, in the United States. And we're more than that now, almost double that. And but Adam brought up this point. I hadn't really thought of it in this particular way, but I thought it was a good rhetorical approach, which is when this is all said and done, Dr. Drew will have been wrong about his death estimate, but he will actually have been way closer than the people estimating 1 to 2 million deaths in the United States. So why are we not ridiculing those people with the same ferocity that we're ridiculing Dr. Drew if what we're going after is accuracy? But I think it shows that the underlying thing here is not accuracy, in fact, but is something else.
What's Dr. Drew being ridiculed over?
What?
What's Dr. Drew being ridiculed over?
He's been critical of some of the responses and the overreactions. And so people are calling him a virus denier and just a flu bro. And
someone took and a burner account, on Twitter, took a bunch of stuff, small clips out of context, strung them together in a video clip, and it went viral. And,
well, I think the
even,
treatment of Dr. Drew is the answer to your question, is it not, Daniel?
Even some former listeners of this show were trashing Dr. Drew, calling him a snake oil salesman and things like that.
Well, that treatment of him is the answer to the question you were just posing to me, wasn't it?
Well, it depends on what you mean by that. You should probably explicate since it's your show.
Okay, I'm not clear 100% on what your question was, because I was confused about the Dr. Drew thing, but...
My question is, why, when it's all said and done, Drew's number of 20,000 deaths will be closer than the numbers given of 2 to 3 million deaths in the United States. My point, and Adam's point was, if we're focused on accuracy and we're ridiculing Drew because his views were inaccurate, why are we not equally and even not more so ridiculing the 2 to 3 million death people? Why aren't the people who were listening to this show previously saying that these researchers are snake oil salesmen, for instance?
Right, because it was never about accuracy.
Oh, what?
It was about compliance, and Dr. Drew is being shamed. He's being socially shamed because we all know he's a pussy, and he can be pushed in that way, where Adam can't. And the only reason Drew is as strong as he is because he's friends with Adam, and Adam calls him out when he's being a pussy. And they know that. They know that you can get in Drew's mentions and you can intimidate him socially. This has always been about compliance. It's always been about, if you disagree with following the rule and doing things collectively, then we are going to shame you. How dare you speak out? How dare you engage in a discussion? I mean, I would even say that's what happened to us with that the listener who went off on us in that way. That's what it was about. It was about trying to shame us for holding an opinion that's different. That's why I said I've been consistent from the beginning about this. And I'm being proven correct about it. I mean, I was even... You asked me the number, Daniel, and I even said 1 million will make me feel like I was okay with this. I thought it was going to be a lot less, but I'm not an expert, so I was trying to be very... giving myself a wide berth with the number you were asking
me
about.
You're giving a big error bar. Yeah, exactly. You're giving a big error bar.
I was giving you a big error bar because I'm not a fucking epidemiologist, and you threw me that question. I was like, why are you throwing me under the bus? But
that's my job.
It's social shaming. It's compliance. It's obedience. That's what it's about. And that's why I think the really subversive question I'm asking here is, why aren't more people angry? Why aren't they angry?
I think they are. They're just not on Twitter. And that's going to be the awakening here, right?
I think I'm sorry, William, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, just like Trump's re-election, you know, it's going to shake Twitter, the Twitterati, the blue check marks to their core.
I think, Justin, because you have been locked up in your home for so long, you have bought too much into the social media side of this.
I'm not even on Twitter that much.
It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. A little bit will do. A little dab will do you.
Well, and let's be fair, a little yabba dabba do will do you. Yeah, a little yabba dabba do you. No, I think there's other things going on with me as well psychologically. I think I'm just angry in general a lot of times. I think that my general disposition is I'm going to be the forefront of the rebellion. Honestly, if I was in California right now, William was like, let's get shovels and go to the Venice skate park, I would probably legitimately go with him and get arrested. So I think there's that. And I also think I moved across the country to start a new life, and I'm living by myself, and all of that is fucking stopped because of this shit. So it impacts me in a different way, and it really frustrates me and angers me. I am not suffering from Mahomes derangement syndrome. Thank you very much. I do not hate Patrick Mahomes. I like him.
That's
okay?
From Discord. We have some... Discord commentary.
Have
which I
ever
really
said
like.
Anything negative about? I don't think I've ever said a negative word about Patrick Mahomes. Have I?
All I know is I like the people in Discord trolling you live on air.
Yeah, they're doing the job favorite. That we do, but better.
Yeah. No, have I ever said a negative word about Patrick Mahomes?
Justin, you know I don't listen to the show or remember anything we talk about. Maybe I have no idea.
I haven't. Okay. And the point is. And this is another thing that makes me mad about the left. They make a movie like Network. I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. And they get the idea that they make people believe only they can have the righteous indignation. Now is the time to be righteously indignant. God damn it, Disney, open up and let us go. The end.
Give me Disney or give me death.
I'm almost to that point, man.
Andrew Breitbart would be proud.
All right, anyone else have any final thoughts before we sum up this episode?
No.
No.
Very cathartic for me to just come on here and rant once a week.
And that is why the podcast was originally founded. When I was living in California and I couldn't say what I thought out in public, I was like, oh, wow, we should make a podcast. And now we're here.
with tens of listeners.
All right, William, what did you learn this trip?
I learned that the revolution has already begun.
Daniel?
I learned that there will be no sports until 2021, according to Justin. Plenty of time to save up for those Patriots season tickets. Justin, what did you learn this week?
I think there will be sports, Daniel, but I just think they're going to run them without any fans in the stands. I think they're not going to let that happen, but I think that means the ad revenue will go through the roof because everyone will be watching from home. I learned that revolution doesn't have to be bloody and violent, which makes me feel a lot better because I thought I had like 6 months left on my life. I really did. I was looking forward and I was like, I'm going to be on the front line and I'm going to get like shot in the face for
wearing a Rorschach
mask.
Justin was cleaning his musket.
I was like, where do I get a musket?
Can't even spell guerrilla warfare.
G-O-R-I-L-L-A, right?
That's right. Well, we hope you learned something this week, and we hope you have a little bit of revolution in you as well. Don't tell us on the social medias because we're not checking them anymore, but go to themidside.com/podcast.
The revolution will not be tweeted.
No, it will not. And tell a friend about the show. Really important, especially now that we feel more connected to each other, especially for people who might have unpopular opinions.
Oh, and speaking of connected, tried to do this week, but YouTube fucked us over. I tried to do a Sucker Punch live watch on YouTube where we didn't show it. We synced everyone up and we were commenting on it. And twice, this was on Film Junkie's channel. If you follow me on Twitter, you know that Film Junkie is someone I go on his show often. On his live account, and he had previously done a live stream of Man of Steel, a live watch of Man of Steel, and a live watch of Dawn of the Dead. Twice. So once we were doing it, and about 25 minutes in, it kicked us off and showed him an email saying we broke the terms of service, so he didn't even say copyright. And then second, kicked it off again. So next Saturday... So what's the date on Saturday, this coming Saturday? The 25th or whatever? Yeah, I believe it's the 25th. The 25th at 10 p.m. Eastern time, 7 p.m. Pacific time on Twitch, we're going to do the live watch again. So we're going to be doing a deep dive on Sucker Punch. And that's a great way. It was helping me feel more connected to the Snyder community and helped me feel like I was actually engaging with them and engaging with them in a way that's beyond the Snyder cut. So... that's a great example of engagement and being more connected to each other.
Twitch is owned by YouTube, isn't it? Which is owned by Google?
I don't know. Doesn't Google own everything?
Yes. Tell a friend something or other.
Amazon owns
Twitch. I had no idea. Interesting. Thank you, Discord people. You can join our Discord too. Go to themidside.com and look for a show and click on the Discord link. Thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating us. You can go to patreon.com/themidside to give a couple bucks every time we produce one of these things. And until next time, we love you.
This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin M. Wozneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Happy rebellion, everyone.
I also like Patrick Mahomes. I have no problem with Patrick Mahomes. Andy Reid, meh. But Patrick Mahomes.
Andy Reid's kind of just there. But, you know, Mahomes.
I like my coaches less lovable and cuddly, I think.
You've just been conditioned over 20 years. Well,
yeah, I think so.
I was thinking about that the other day, real quick. You only experienced half of Brady Belichick. You only had 10 years.
Right? I did, but I have gone back and watched many, many, many games prior to that.
Yeah, so. It's not quite the same, but yeah.
Oh, F you and your purity tests. F
gatekeeper.
You and the A.